The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Zoo Man. It's the kind of name that sounds like it should belong to a superhero or something. Maybe a character on a cartoon show that teaches kids all about wild animals. Tiger King may have been another one that comes to your mind. But in the early 90s, this whimsical-sounding nickname belonged to a man in his early 30s, father to two sons, Thomas Husky. All thanks to his ties to the Knoxville Zoo, where Thomas helped his father take care of the elephants. Or I guess that was one explanation anyway. The other, that part's a little darker. You see, those who worked along Magnolia Avenue in Knoxville, Tennessee, knew Zoo Man to be the kind of customer who was best avoided. The kind who liked to do unspeakable things off the clock, with the outskirts of the zoo as the backdrop. Even knowing that some of the women who sold the types of services Zoo Man was interested in had already accepted this risk as part of the profession by the time they had met him. Sometimes the luxury of choice is too pricey for those in need of money, and sometimes the true cost isn't revealed until much later. When a hunter dares walk through a forest on a haunted day in October, only to discover... Well, let's pause here for a minute. So before we dig into this kind of case that gets disturbingly dark right off the bat, we should probably move along to the intro and, more importantly, the content warnings for this episode. Today's case, it's a dark one. Hey, Crime Sad listeners, I'm Ashley, your sole host this week as Ricky switched roles for the week, building a shed for his parents. Today, we will be going over an older case, one that dates back to February of 1992, when officers first became aware that something wasn't quite right with Thomas Husky, also known as Zoo Man. Unfortunately, catching Thomas preying on what officers believed to be one of his victims wasn't enough to get this dangerous man off the streets for long, giving us a glimpse at what happens when you give a predator a second chance. Every case has its complications, complex layers, and frustrating twists, but this one stands out as being particularly tangled, absurd, and downright horrific. Before we get too far into it, though, we must warn you that today's episode includes discussions of sex work, sexual assault, strangulation, murder, and mental illness, with a focus on dissociative identity disorder. If you're sensitive when it comes to any of these topics, you may want to skip this episode and tune in next week instead. For now, we'll turn our attention back to a disturbing discovery made in 1992 that led investigators to take a closer look at a suspect they had already let off the hook. On October 20th of 1992, a hunter walking through a secluded stretch of woods just off of Cahaba Lane in Knoxville, Tennessee, came face to face with death. Probably not in the way that he expected, having accidentally stumbled onto a crime scene. Stumbling upon something so horrific would have changed his hunting experience forever. I can't even imagine how fast your stomach would drop, not to mention alone in the woods. Law enforcement was immediately called out to examine the naked corpse the hunter had found lying underneath an old mattress, marking the beginning of a new hunt for justice in honor of the innocent woman who had been bound, likely assaulted, and strangled to death before being discarded in the woods as if she wasn't even human. The victim was later identified as 32-year-old Patricia Rose Anderson. Patricia was 2 months pregnant when her life was stolen, which is undeniably tragic. Yet, as horrifying as the discovery of Patricia's body was, the forest wasn't done revealing the haunting secrets that a monster had tried to hide within it. When Tom Presley, an investigator who worked for the Knoxville Police Department, heard about the bodies being found hidden among the isolated stretch of trees in East Knox County, something sparked in his mind. Not just disgust, but realization as he recognized that exact crime scene from an arrest he had made back in February of that same year. Presley called the county right up and told them directly, "I think I know who your killer is." And that leads us to Thomas Husky. So, in February of 1992, before this killer was known as a killer, as far as we know anyway, paying for standard sexual services wasn't enough for Zooman. He earned himself quite the reputation among the women working the streets he frequented by assaulting and abusing whichever sex workers were still willing to go with him. Targeting a vulnerable group of women, he got away with it too, for a while, that is. Despite often being referred to as the oldest profession, sex workers have been forced to deal with a long history of stigma and judgments from society, even when crimes are committed against them. The fact that sex work is illegal in many places is known to make many sex workers reluctant to have anything to do with law enforcement, to the point where countless victims suffer in silence rather than report assaults against them. All too often, those who do come forward don't receive the support they deserve, as sex workers tend to be seen as less credible and sympathetic than other victims. A study done exploring this topic highlighted the legitimacy of victims' concerns, concluding that most of the officers the researchers interviewed seemed to view violence against female sex workers as an inescapable part of their chosen profession. After acknowledging that sex workers are often victimized by clients, including being robbed and assaulted, one female officer complained, quote, "After they get messed with, they call us and report it. Can you believe that? And we have to deal with it. Could you imagine that a drug dealer reported to us that someone beat him up while selling or took all of his drugs? It's unbelievable." Unquote. Zooman likely knew that assaulting sex workers meant that his victims were far less likely to send officers in his direction. But in February of 1992, this predator's luck would finally run out when one of his victims found the courage to go to the Knoxville Police Department and report her attacker. Tom Presley was the detective who took the victim's report that day. And as she recounted how her attacker had taken her to an isolated area along Cahaba Lane and brought her out to the woods where he had roughed her up and robbed her, she was even willing to go back there just to show the detective where the attack took place. Presley would later recall reaching a dead end on this quest, where they would find Thomas Husky's car along with some of the victim's things. The victim led Detective Presley into the woods straight to the scene of the crime. That's when things took an even darker turn. And this is almost too crazy to believe, but right there at the same place where he had assaulted his last victim, Thomas had already had another victim naked and on her knees. And this is all within the same day, which can be seen as such a chilling sign that Thomas was the type of predator that wouldn't stop victimizing vulnerable women. Not unless he was locked up physically, incapable of getting his hands on them. To his credit, Detective Presley did try to make that happen. He arrested the predator on the spot, and the investigation into Thomas Husky picked up as law enforcement began to build a case against him. They talked with other women Thomas had victimized, with both the first victim and the girl found in the forest, accusing Thomas of assaulting them, tying them up, then raping and robbing them. But talking to the police was one thing. Testifying, which was needed to secure a conviction, was something none of Thomas's victims were willing to do. Without the victims' testimonies and cooperation, the detectives didn't have enough evidence to follow through with the charges brought against Thomas. He was released, sent back onto the streets to terrorize more women. In an interview addressing the topic of sex workers falling prey to violent predators, forensic psychiatrist Dr. Sanjay explained, quote, "I believe the reason that sex workers are targeted is a lot of people wouldn't be alarmed if they're missing. Also, they're thought of as being vulnerable. The police don't have infinite resources, so they would not focus on if they found out a sex worker is missing. It's not going to be the top of their to-do list," unquote. It makes me wonder if that's the kind of mindset Thomas had after getting away with assaulting who knows how many sex workers. I mean, a detective did catch him in the act, but he still got away with it. And I wonder if that got to his head, boosted his ego a bit. Given what Thomas is accused of doing after the charges were dropped, I'm guessing the close call must have had some impact on him. Maybe instead of fueling his ego, it heightened his fear of getting caught. Whatever went on in that brain of his, even the threat of time in prison wasn't enough to stop him from attacking women. He did change his approach, though. Instead of the arrest motivating him to stop breaking the law and harming women, Thomas seems to have concluded that the answer to avoiding being arrested again was to make sure that his future victims couldn't tell a single soul about their time with him. Patricia Rose Anderson, Patricia Ann Johnson, Darlene Smith, Suzanne East Stone. The remains of these four women were found discarded in that eerie, isolated stretch of land just off of Cahaba Lane. That call from Detective Presley ensured that the man suspected of murdering them was tracked down not long after the women's naked bodies were discovered. Thomas Husky was detained and interrogated by David Davenport, a Tennessee Bureau of Investigation agent. Based on what Davenport had shared since then, it sounds like there wasn't anything to do notable about his initial interview with Thomas. But the second conversation after Thomas had a little time to settle into his new jail cell, that's when things would start to get interesting. At the start of that second interview, Davenport described Thomas as being pretty much the same as he was during that first interrogation. That is until Davenport got up and left the room partway through and was greeted by a distinctively different version of Thomas when he returned. Thomas would say, "Give me a cigarette and I'll tell you everything you want to know." Thomas told him, adding, "I'm Kyle. I hate Tommy." This more demanding, harsher persona was the investigator's introduction to the disorder that Thomas would go on to use as a defense against looming murder charges. Though before all of that, Thomas, or I guess Kyle it was, had something to get off his chest. Sticking to his Kyle persona, Thomas Husky confessed to raping, torturing, and killing the victims. He claimed that he only carried out these brutal acts to hurt Thomas, the same man who was being accused of murdering Patricia Anderson, Patricia Johnson, Darlene Smith, and Suzanne Stone. Davenport wasn't buying it. Even as Thomas's other personalities emerged, the investigator was convinced it was all an act, a desperate attempt to dodge responsibility for the agony that Thomas had inflicted upon his victims and their loved ones. By then, investigators had already carried out a search of Thomas's parents' mobile home, and they found even more incriminating evidence. By simply standing in the doorway of Thomas's room, a detective was able to recognize the orange hay baling rope that had been left right there on Thomas's bedroom floor as the same type of rope that was used to bind the victims. Once they got to searching, detectives found women's jewelry in Thomas's room that they believe belonged to the victims, intertwined with a strand of blonde hair. They also found a knife in the bathroom. And let me tell you, this was all just laying out, sitting out in the open. It's not exactly subtle. It sounds like one of those cases where a guilty verdict must be inevitable, right? There was that whole multiple personality disorder thing Thomas was propping up as his defense, but it couldn't really be enough to wreck the whole case against him, could it? All right, so real quick, let's talk about Fume, and that's Fume spelled F-U-M. This little thing has actually become a part of my routine lately. You know those times where you just want something to do with your hands? For me, it's always when I'm editing or researching cases. I catch myself reaching for snacks, drinks, or just random stuff out of habit. That's where Fume has been kind of awesome. It's not a vape. It's not a pipe. It's just a flavored air device. No nicotine, no vapor, no batteries. You literally just draw through it and enjoy the flavor. Super simple. And the flavors are actually really good. My go-to is crisp mint, super refreshing. But I've also tried peach blush and cinnamon hearts, and honestly, they're all solid. It's just one of those little swaps you can make to feel like you're doing something better for yourself. If you want to check it out, head to tryfume.com/salad. That's tryfume.com and use code salad to get a free gift with your journey pack. You would think, with evidence lying out in the open, it would be enough. However, we've seen plenty of cases where even that isn't a sure thing. So let's take a look at dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as multiple personality disorder. It has a long controversial history as a hotly debated disorder. And because of this, the disorder, it wasn't even included in the DSM, Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, until 1980, almost 30 years after the first edition of the DSM was published. And so, in the decades since its inclusion into the DSM, successful efforts have been made to understand dissociative identity disorder, or DID, better and clear up some of the many misconceptions about the disorder. Given the increasing reach of social media, the debate has arguably become increasingly widespread as more people create content around sharing their experiences with dissociative identity disorder. Audiences have reacted to this in a variety of different ways, ranging from encouraging and supportive to accusing creators of making it all up for attention. Meanwhile, the majority of medical professionals now agree that DID is a valid disorder, most often seen developing during early childhood. This protective mechanism can be triggered as children try to psychologically distance themselves from ongoing trauma by compartmentalizing painful experiences and displacing them onto other aspects of themselves, resulting in at least two or more distinct personalities. And it's believed that about 1% of the general population has DID, which makes it about as common as schizophrenia. Challenges stemming from symptoms such as gaps in memory, feeling detached, confusion, and the overall stress of living with this disorder can lead to, or at least worsen, additional mental health issues such as anxiety, depression, and mood swings. So, of course, it's important to show compassion to people with DID, despite the stigma that clings to the diagnosis. That being said, people pretending to have DID isn't anything new. Cybill, a book that was sold as the true story of a woman with DID, is one of the best examples of this. The bestseller has been credited, at least in part, to the jump in reported cases of DID from less than 100 to thousands within a few years, following its publication in 1973. Spreading awareness is a good thing, though, right? Well, yes, except it's since been uncovered that Shirley Mason, the real woman the book was based on, lied about having DID to get closer to her psychiatrist, Dr. Connie Wilbur. Meanwhile, Dr. Wilbur has been accused of doing incredibly shady things while pursuing her fascination with DID, including injecting Shirley with sodium pentothal, which would make her more suggestible, and dismissing Shirley's attempts to confess the truth. Similar to today's case, Kenneth Bianchi is an example of another criminal who claimed to have DID after being accused of raping and murdering 10 victims between October 1977 and February 1978 with his cousin, This defense didn't work for Kenneth, who was deemed to be lying and ultimately pled guilty, turning on his cousin to avoid the death penalty. So opinions on whether Thomas Husky truly suffers from dissociative identity disorder are bound to vary, of course. And even if everything Thomas had claimed is true, there's still room to debate if a DID diagnosis would justify Thomas being found not guilty. After all, people with DID aren't known to be more violent than those without the disorder. District Attorney General Randy Nichols was determined to prosecute the case regardless. The murder charges against Thomas Husky weren't going to be dropped without a real fight for justice. But first, there were other matters to be taken care of. Instead of heading straight into the murder trial, the DA declared to circle back to the assault allegations that were brought against Thomas before he allegedly escalated to murder. By 1996, Thomas Husky was successfully prosecuted and convicted for brutally attacking those earlier victims. He was found guilty of several charges, including multiple counts of aggravated rape, aggravated robbery, and kidnapping, earning him a prison sentence of 66 years, set to end in November of 2056, when Thomas is 96 years old, unless he's granted for parole before then. But the district attorney wasn't done with him yet. 3 years later, in 1999, Thomas Husky returned to court as his murder trial began. For this second trial, the stakes were much higher. This time, Nichols wasn't aiming for the death penalty. Meanwhile, Thomas's defense attorneys, Gregory Isaacs and Herbert Moncler, insisted that Thomas should be found not guilty by reason of insanity. Thomas wasn't claiming that he hadn't strangled Patricia Rose, Patricia Ann, Darlene, and Susan. Rather, the defense argued that Thomas's alter, Kyle, was to blame. The product of a disorder that Thomas had developed after suffering through childhood trauma. In response to this, prosecutors tried to chip away at Thomas's credibility, calling on William Fletcher, one of Thomas's old cellmates, who testified that Thomas told him of his plans to pretend to have multiple personalities to avoid the death penalty. To explain how Thomas got so good at faking the disorder, prosecutors pointed the finger at Cybill, the book that they believe indirectly taught the defendant how to fake DID. Both sides appeared to invest a ton of time and energy into the trial, calling up expert witnesses and passionately arguing for what they believed was the most just verdict. But by the time Thomas's fate was put in the hands of the jury, they struggled to agree on a verdict. While most of the members of the jury believed that Thomas was a murderer, they were deadlocked on the issue of his mental state. And after 5 days of deliberation, the judge declared a mistrial. Despite this disappointment, Nichols wasn't ready to give up. The legal battle continued all the way from fall of 1992 into the later months of 2005. Throughout this time, the prosecution's case against Thomas suffered from a couple of hefty blows due to the defense's team's success during the appeal process. During the process, the defense called the search warrant obtained by the Knox County Sheriff's Office investigators, which they had believed granted them legal permission to search Thomas Husky's parents' mobile home, into question. The appellate courts ruled in the defense's favor, declaring that the city judicial commissioner who had approved the warrant didn't have the authority to issue it. The warrant wasn't flawed. This meant that Nichols could no longer use the evidence found in the home to prove his case, which maybe wouldn't have been so bad if the appellate court hadn't also ruled that Thomas's confession had been coerced, striking his statements from Nichols' arsenal of evidence. So by October of 2005, the murder charges against Thomas Husky were dismissed. The prosecution simply no longer had enough usable evidence against Thomas to secure a conviction. Despite confessing to assaulting and the strangulation of innocent women to death, it looks like Thomas will never be convicted of murder, a serial killer who got away with it. In fact, it seems unlikely at this point that anyone will be held responsible for the murders of Patricia Rose Anderson, Patricia Ann Johnson, Darlene Smith, and Susan East Stone. This disappointing outcome is something Randy Nichols has addressed, stating, quote, "I misjudged it tremendously. I never did see what it would turn into and what it ultimately turned out to be. I did not see that," unquote. But perhaps we can find some kind of comfort in knowing that the man most people believed killed Patricia, Rose, Patricia Ann, Darlene, and Susan has spent about 30 years behind bars so far, despite that injustice. And behind bars is where he remains to this day, currently incarcerated at the South Central Correctional Facility in Clifton, Tennessee. I think it's both tragic and important to acknowledge the fact that it seems that the women of Knoxville are a bit safer with Thomas Husky in prison. His decades-long sentence wasn't handed down as a punishment for murder. Ultimately, it came down to those aggravated rape, aggravated robbery, and kidnapping charges that did him in. I wouldn't doubt that the ongoing murder investigation gave prosecutors extra motivation to secure that conviction. But I can't help but wonder if four lives could have been saved if those charges had been aggressively pursued much earlier, before Thomas's violent attacks escalated. If he had been sentenced to decades in prison directly following the violent rapes he committed, would that have been enough to spare Patricia Anderson, Patricia Johnson, Darlene Smith, and Suzanne Stone, and all of their loved ones, the trauma and unfathomable pain that Thomas inflicted on them? In this situation, I truly believe that Thomas Husky is the only one to blame. Still, it might be worth considering the better endings that could be possible if all victims felt safe enough to speak out against their abusers, granted support, empathy, and compassion as they try to heal from the traumatic experiences that they did nothing to deserve. As of the day that we're recording this episode, Thomas is a few months away from turning 65 on August 20th. Considering he still has a few decades left of his 64-year sentence, it's very possible that he will die in prison. It's also possible that he'll be let out on parole before then, having qualified for his first parole hearing back in 2015. However, there has been some progress made when it comes to protecting sex workers. Despite the negative stigma that remains, more than three decades after this monster forever scarred his victims, sex workers who don't feel comfortable reaching out to law enforcement for any reason now have other options, resources they can turn to in place specially just for them. One example is NUM, N-U-M, a charity based in the United Kingdom that provides support, tools, and services to sex workers. Through their website, sex workers can exchange important insights with each other by reporting incidents, checking client details, and signing up for alerts of people to watch out for. They also offer extra one-on-one help through the option of connecting with a caseworker by calling their number 0800-464-7669, Tuesday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., or through email casework@nationaluglymugs.org. In the United States, the Sex Workers Project is another great option for sex workers who are in need of non-judgmental, accepting support. According to their website, the Sex Workers Project provides client-centered legal and social services to individuals who engage in sex work, regardless of whether they do so by choice, circumstance, or coercion. Reaching out by calling 646-602-5617 or emailing the organization at swp@urbanjustice.org. You can start the process of making progress with the help of knowledgeable attorneys and social workers who are committed to making the world a safer place for sex workers. It's incredibly important to spread compassion along with awareness. So as we wrap up today's deep dive into the tragic case, we encourage all our listeners to share this episode on social media to keep the conversation going. And of course, now that we got to fully discuss a case that has been nagging at the back of our minds this week, we would love to hear your thoughts on the final verdict. Do you think Thomas Husky was guilty of murder? Was his sentence just? Would you feel comfortable knowing he was rebuilding his life among the rest of society again? Leave us a comment to share your perspective. And as always, we're so grateful for our Crime Salad Patreon and Apple subscribers. Your support means the world to us, and it allows us to keep this podcast going. Thank you to all of our listeners for tuning in. We're so grateful for this chance to share these heartbreaking but important cases with you as we do our best to lend our voices to those who have been unfairly silenced. Stay safe, take care of yourselves, and we'll catch you next week for another deep dive into the stories that need to be told.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
I can't tell you how often I hear, oh, I'm a little OCD. I like things neat. That's not OCD. I'm Howie Mandel, and I know this because I have OCD. Actual OCD causes relentless unwanted thoughts. What if I did something terrible and forgot? What if I'm a bad person? Why am I thinking this terrible thing? It makes you question absolutely everything, and you'll do anything to feel better. OCD is debilitating, but it's also highly treatable with the right kind of therapy. Regular talk therapy doesn't cut it. OCD needs specialized therapy. That's why I want to tell you about NoCD. NoCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for OCD. Their licensed therapists provide specialized therapy virtually, and it's covered by insurance for over 155 million Americans. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, visit NoCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call and learn more. That's NoCD.com.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.